Weather and Ag in Focus, thanks for joining us today. I'm meteorologist Justin Storm with Ag Director Bridget Riedel, and this is Weather and Ag in Focus. We got fun things coming up on the show today. We got Marsha Van Leer from Gowan coming on as our guest this afternoon, and we got a few conversations on some ag topics we're going to get to, a little more interest in conventional corn, 8 reasons soy is good for your health, and propane steam and farming. So we got a few fun topics as well as a couple from yesterday. Ag Director Bridget Riedel is with me. And Bridget, how are you doing on this Tuesday afternoon?
I am great. It is a busy Tuesday afternoon. I don't know about everybody else, but lots of phone calls, emails, and so forth taking care of over here. So happy to do that. And, you know, we're really progressing a lot faster towards some combining in different places, but we'll see how it goes. There's been a lot of rain up in that Devil's Lake area. They're swamped. I mean, literally. Uh-huh. Whereas down here, we'd be okay with a little bit of rainfall in a number of places. We'll just see how it turns out.
We didn't really get anything down in Fargo, and I didn't get anything in Grand Forks. But, man, if you go just north of Grand Forks, I have some friends that are, I don't know, 6 miles, 6, 8 miles north of East Grand Forks, and they picked up an inch of rain just last night, and there were a few spots around the area that saw several inches of rain north of Highway 2 yesterday and around the Devil's Lake Basin. I'm just trying to pull up the latest reports here. It's being a little slow, and it looks like some of the harder hit areas were up by Langdon and areas north of Langdon, coming in about 3 to 5 inches of rainfall. Just northwest of Devil's Lake Basin and Cando got about 2 inches, and even out towards Minot.
Cando. You're going to get hate mail.
Excuse me. Call it Ada. We'll make sure we get some on Ada as well.
Get Ada, yes.
I will never let that one die. That one was the funniest one that happened. I was like, wait, Ada?
I am going to send you an email with several town names on it and just let you take a stab at pronunciations. You know, some of them are pretty crazy.
There's a few around here that I've still never heard of, and they pop up and I'm like, oh, we're going to butcher this one. Even in Minnesota, I lived in Minnesota for 21 years, and there were still towns around where I lived that would occasionally come up that I've never heard of before.
Well, I apologize for interrupting you, but I just trying to help out a little bit.
Oh, that's all right. Minot also came in at a 2.05. So, I mean, there was a good amount of rainfall over the areas of northwestern Minnesota, 3/4 to a little over 1.5 inches of rain. But down anywhere south, really, of Highway 2, with an exception for a few spots over in Lakes Country, they didn't get anything at all. It looks like the winter over in Lakes Country was over by Underwood, and all they got was a 1/4 inch of rain. I'm sure there's a few spots in there, some localized spots that saw more than that, but at least based on what hit Endon stations, really nothing impressive south of Highway 2.
Well, you know, that's probably exactly the route that I was having in mind, about nothing very impressive south of Highway 2 right now as far as rainfall. Mm-hmm. But I do know that there's some folks that are really gearing up for potato harvest in that neighborhood, so they probably are okay with it not being heavy rainfall. They got to get those trucks in and out of the field without things becoming terribly muddy.
Sure, yeah, of course. They definitely don't want to, and hopefully we can keep it that way for sure, but there's a pretty good bet of most locations seeing some rainfall by the end of the weekend. So it's kind of an active weather pattern that's going to continue for the next week. We'll see a couple of disturbances. Really, it's one storm system, but we're going to get a couple waves of energy that will track through here. And that will bring a chance for some showers and storms late overnight tonight, Wednesday evening into Wednesday night. Even a couple possible on Thursday, but for the most part, we'll just say that Thursday is dry. And we get a third round of some isolated and scattered showers and storms Friday evening into Friday night. And then we'll watch for a fourth, larger organized low-pressure system. It's trying to pull up here in North Dakota. Signs are pointing at it doing that, but we'll see how it eventually develops over the next few days. But it's trying to bring in a more organized, wider spread rain event across much of our area late in the day on Sunday and into Monday. So kind of like one of those like day and a half events of just kind of steady rain. Not going to rain the entire time, but over that day and a half, there will be areas of steady rain.
Okay, so speaking of rainfall, weather patterns, etc., I see if I can find it. I've had a story pop up a couple of times in regards to.
Is it Reed Timmer?
No, Hurricane Francine. You haven't said a lot about anything down there, but there's been some fallout from it in some of those key cotton and rice growing areas that are trying to harvest. And also it's really affected some barge traffic. So I wasn't sure if that was going to give you anything to talk about up here when it comes to an effect on our weather.
Yeah, you know, how do you want to put it? It indirectly affects our weather, but it doesn't directly affect our weather. So whatever is kind of going on, to put it in a very simple put or a simple analogy, is going to kind of just stay the same, because that portion of whatever is causing our weather can't really move eastward because it's kind of getting blocked by the remnants of that hurricane until it eventually moves off or gets absorbed into the main flow, the jet stream. Now, sometimes that happens a lot faster, and sometimes it kind of sits there and stalls out because it just can't move anywhere. And we'll kind of see a couple day delay, and that's kind of what we're seeing today with this area of low pressure off to our west in Montana and the western Dakotas. It's kind of just been there for the last day and a half. That's why we had a chance for showers and storms yesterday, today, tomorrow, and Thursday. A little four-day window of showers and storms across the northern plains. It's because it just can't really move further to the east, or it has to get kicked up north into Canada, and there's nothing to really kick that storm system further to the north until we head into the weekend. But by that time, the remnants of that hurricane will have been out of our area, and this whole little system is going to eventually move into the Great Lakes area by Thursday and Friday. So I hope that answers your question. Indirectly, it does affect our weather, but directly, no, it doesn't.
Okay, and that's fair. That's maybe why we haven't talked about it a whole lot. And again, this has had some hampering effects on rice and cotton harvest that's been going on in those southern parts of the U.S., and it's interrupted some barge traffic. I'm sure there were some water surges. Overall, the Mississippi is still considered low, and that's been a concern as we get into fall, where a lot of that traditional Midwestern state harvest moves down the river system on barges, and they'll have a little more trouble doing that. You know, we've talked about it last year as well. When the river levels are low, you're not able to fill a barge as full, or you may have to use smaller barges. You may not be able to have as much traffic on the river as you normally would, and it just hampers the amount of volume that can move. So that can slow us up in some ways. Most of our harvest, though, here in especially North Dakota, we're going by rail to the west, so we don't have nearly as much affected by the river.
I see. And, you know, a lot of people, I know we had this conversation last year around the same time. Well, actually, I think it was in the middle of the summer because we were dealing with drought conditions. But a lot of people don't really think that we still use river transportation for moving goods or crop like that. I mean, you don't really think of like, well, we're still sending barges full of wheat and corn up and down the Mississippi. Mm-hmm. But in fact, we really do. And how much volume, how much do we actually utilize that river for the transportation of agricultural goods?
That's a good question. And my answer to that, without finding a specific number, is high.
A lot.
a lot. But again, not as much from this state as it is from the states south of us.
Sure.
And it's not that those barges go downstream and just deadhead it back up. They're bringing fertilizer back or something else that's their returning load. And so that barge traffic still moves very quickly. And my understanding is it's one of the cheapest ways for transportation, even versus rail and especially trucking. So it's still a vital part of the U.S. We've had guests on before from the area around the Erie Canal in western New York. They don't use the canal as much as they once did because really it's small. It's not as big as the boats and other transportation methods as we're using today, but it still can be used at time from time to time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just things you don't really think about anymore. I mean, there's a lot of things that go behind the scene that you really just don't put a single thought towards. Like, well, where does it go afterwards? Is it on a truck? Is it on a plane? Is it in a train? Or is it on a boat? And then where does it go? What comes back? I mean, all those little things that you don't see, you don't think about it. Just like up in our area, or if you grew up in central Minnesota like I did, I mean, the river's really not that big. You don't really think of big boats going up and down it. But if you lived in an area where it was, it would be a bit more normal to you, I suppose.
So speaking of something that doesn't necessarily occur to you. And this is literally farming with propane, if you will. So there's some work being done out of UC Davis as well as University of Arizona, where they're taking a project that would essentially take an implement that's like a giant steam cleaner, and they'd be able to run it over a field prior to planting. It'll likely have to have some sort of a spike on it that would insert steam, and the steam is created by a propane engine, if you will, on this particular piece of equipment, and that steam would be injected into the soil. The thought behind it is that if you can get the soil temperature between 150 and 160 degrees Fahrenheit for a 15 to 20 minute period, you can in fact kill the germination for some weed seeds and even bacterial or viral diseases that are in the ground. So I don't know how if I could see this as being very widespread, but let's say you're in a vegetable production area and you're farming in 15 or 20 acre increments. Maybe this would be a good fit for you. Certainly if you're an organic farmer and you're having a problem with soil-borne diseases that are affecting your crop, this could be an alternative. But just another idea that's being looked at is, can we use propane to create steam that literally sterilizes the soil?
You know, that's a good point. I'm glad that you brought it that direction, because I was sitting here thinking, I'm like, well, I go out and I drive down the road and that field's huge. What's the practicality of heating all that dirt, sorry, soil, or Sarah, all the way Sarah. Up to 160 degrees for 20 minutes? I mean, that doesn't seem economically feasible to really do that for a reward out of it. But I'm glad you made that point, because it was something I didn't think of. You know, veggie farm, smaller scale operations, just several acres. I mean, that might be a better thing, because once, if you do get a disease, especially in, say, like tomatoes or whatnot, if that works its way into the soil, really the only way you're getting rid of that is by not producing on it for a period of time, or you burn it out.
And I think this is an interesting concept. Our guest who's coming up today, who works in that realm with weeds and diseases and so forth, is Marcia Van Leer with Gowan Company. She's one of our sponsors for Here We Grow, but I'd like to just hear Marcia's take on it. Marcia has the opportunity with her company to travel and see other crops besides what we raise here in North Dakota. And I'm going to be able to ask Marcia and just say, what do you think? You know, she's been an agronomist in the field at a retail level as well. So that'll be fairly interesting discussion for us. Plus with Marcia, we want to talk about fall herbicide for spring weed control. We want to make sure that we're doing things in a timely fashion. What are our right practices to do that? Because as we get to harvest, things will be happening fast and furiously, and weed control can be one of them. So stay tuned. We're going to visit with Marcia Van Leer with Gowan Company when we return. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus, and a big shout out to Cooper, our show mascot. He's holding down the fort in studio today. Justin and I are both remote. We're not really sure where Dean's at, and that just leaves Cooper to keep the desk in the right place and make sure we're on break. And thanks, Addison, for helping him out. Much appreciated. So to some of our sponsors for Here We Grow, such as Dakota Bank. Don't forget that within the touch of a screen, a live Dakota banker can appear to help you with their interactive teller machine, a wide range of capabilities, and they have extended hours, 7:30 to a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday, and even mornings on Saturdays. Check out Dakota Bank. They have a new location in Fargo right by Target. And then the Steffes Group. Well, auctions are certainly happening. We're seeing a trend in the used equipment market that it's a little bit easier to get a hold of some later model tractors. Combines seem to be at a good price. And so check out the steffesgroup.com. See what's going on for auction sales for them. Maybe there's something there for you. Speaking of something for each one of us, well, that's why we have a guest today, Marcia Van Leer with Gowan. She's always got options for each one of us when it comes to weed control and other things. And Marcia, I think you were kind of in queue listening. Did you hear when I mentioned the steam sterilizer for soil?
I did hear a little bit of it. I didn't hear the whole conversation, though.
Essentially, this is a study that's being done by UC Davis and University of Arizona. Justin and I have decided it has to be on much smaller acreage than most of our large fields here in this region, or an organic farmer, where they want to have a steam engine, if you will, on some sort of a tillage tool. I envision it. I haven't seen it yet, but I would envision it has to have some spikes into the ground that would inject steam into the soil to take that temperature between 150 and 160 degrees for a 15 to 20 minute period of time in order to kill off the germination on weed seeds and then potentially remove diseases. As an agronomist, good, bad, what do you think of a concept like that?
Spendy.
I find it funny where it's being tested at, considering the water shortage that we have anyways in those areas. You know, it probably, for like a small scale operation, it probably is something that would be viable. I mean, you look at some of the stuff that's coming down for weed control with, you know, the lasers and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't necessarily rule it out, but for a large scale, I don't necessarily see it. I don't see a corn or soybean or wheat grower doing something like that. I can see, you know, we sterilize soil for potatoes.
Right.
Really?
I know they have some issues coming in down in that vegetable market, like Yuma down in New Mexico and in California. I do know they have some disease issues that come in, and, I mean, that can decimate a crop or you can't even plant in that field.
Let's go back to the sterilizing the potato fields and whatnot. What's that mean? How are you doing it? I was unaware that this was actually a thing that was done to size.
So there is I don't remember what the soil sterilant is called, but there is a company that comes in and they inject a chemical into the soil and it kills disease. It doesn't kill weeds as far as I know. It's just for disease control. I've seen it done in fields up here. You know, we get disease into a potato field and trying to think when that was that we had such a catastrophic potato yield. It wasn't that long ago. I mean, when you sat there and you look at it, you know, potatoes went sky high because our yields came in, disease came in late, and it was, what were they getting? Maybe a quarter of what their yields were supposed to be?
I think that was it. Their storage ability was really bad at the same time because of that. Like, they had so much moisture content, right? Weren't they just falling apart in storage, too?
Yeah, and it wasn't late blight. I can't remember what disease came in. I just know that it caused a lot of issues, especially up around here with the potato warehouses.
So is this something that's regularly done, or does it just happen? Do they just do it periodically, or if there's a year that disease has emerged in the area or in the year before's crop?
I don't know about all growers. I know of a couple growers up here that do it regularly. In a year that they're going to put potatoes on a field, that field would get this application. And normally it's done in the fall.
Okay, is this just like a granular or a liquid, or is it kind of like a big aerator where they just come in and punch a bunch of holes and leave a little chem behind?
It's a liquid, I want to say. I'm trying to remember because it's been a while since I've actually driven by a field that had it.
We can leave it up to the listeners. If somebody who does this, I'm a little more familiar, you can give us a call, 701-293-9000 on the Red Wing Shoe line. And if you can't think of much of the details, Marcia, that's fine. We can move on from that since you don't really deal with it.
Yeah, it's not, you know, it's not a product that I deal with or that I really dealt with in my agronomy career. That's specific to the potato growers. Sure. It'd be interesting if somebody would call in because I can't remember. I just remember watching it like, oh, cool. There we go.
Yeah, I've seen it too, but I don't remember the specifics. And Marcia, just the fact that we can kind of piece it together, especially what you remember of it, is very helpful. That's why Marcia's a resource to so many people in North Dakota because of her experience in retail and then also right now with Gowan Company. Marcia and I have a friend from college who I think she's just trying to be funny, but she just wanted to know if there's any specific diseases on rutabagas. And I think we could worry about that a different time, Marcia, don't you?
Oh, rutabagas. Good Lord.
Yep. So, all right. So it is bottom of the hour. What we want to do is catch up with a little bit of news. But then when Marcia returns, we want to talk about doing some weed control right now in the fall as we get ready to go towards the spring. Is that possible? Sure it is. And I think we're also going to touch on the fact that what's old is new again in some ways to bring that type of an operation to the forefront of a farmer's mind. So we're going to do that when we return. That's with Marcia Van Leer, Gow & Company. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. So glad that you are here, whether you might be getting ready to combine, perhaps you are working in the shop today, you might be in a truck somewhere, or you might just be listening at your desk. Thanks for bringing us in. And as we talk today with Marcia Van Leer of Gow & Company, don't forget to give us your questions at 701-293-9000. That's the Red Wing Shoe Shoe Line. You can send us emails, weatherorag@flagfamily.com. So, Marcia, this is something that I know is top of mind for you right now with farmers, because we can think about doing some weed control right now for spring. Let's just start with the basics. What can we use? When can we start? How do we apply, et cetera? Let's just give people some ideas what they can be doing out there this fall.
So basic weed control, a lot of growers can start now on their wheat stubble. You'll see some of them that are doing a post-harvest application of like a glyphosate or, you know, maybe Anthem Flux, something like that. And that's to kill the weeds that are up now. It's a little early considering what soil temperatures are to do like a soil applied one. Once again, this is just my opinion on that. I generally tell growers, like with our products, you know, let's start after October 1st. By then we know that the soil is for the most part cooling down, and the soil microbes are kind of going dormant, I guess is the best way to say it. There's a lot of products that are out there that guys can put down in the fall to help with that spring weed control. Nice thing with something like that is it gives them a step ahead for when it is time to do, you know, time to get into the field. Okay, we already know that there's something out there that's working, and that's one less thing that we have to worry about. It's kind of a layering system for what's coming next spring.
Can we talk just a minute about soil temperatures? I heard you make mention of that and soil microbial activity. But for those who might not realize, you know, the soil is an active living organism. Why would we or would we not worry about soil temperatures this fall? Maybe for a variety of reasons, but one of them in regard to herbicide activity.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of products that are broken down by soil microbes or soil degradation. So we want those microbes sleeping, so that they don't start working on that active ingredient and lessening the control that we're going to have next spring. That's the biggest issue that we see.
Are there particular weeds that are better controlled if we start thinking about them this fall? Because I heard you mentioned layered products, like layered residuals. So what might come to mind as some weed problems that we really have to get after it, you might say?
So a lot of the perennials, if we do a fall application on perennials, dandelion, we tend to work on that one. Perennials are really the biggest ones, or the late-seeded or the late-seeded broadleaves. We'll see some activity with a fall application. We have products that we put down in the fall, but they're going to work for spring. We just want to put them down in the fall so that they get down there.
Well, spring gets a little bit hectic.
It does. It gets crazy. And, you know, our approach with fall application of chemicals, and it doesn't really matter what application you're putting down, it's a layering approach. We're not in the days of where we can do just one or two applications in the spring and we're going to control all of our weeds. You know, we need that residual down, and that residual is considered a blanket, or I shouldn't say blanket, but a layered approach. And that's, you know, the key to getting these growers to go that way, which they are. They're starting to, because they're seeing what's going on in their fields. And now they're knowing that when we do this, you know, we do a fall application of a certain product, and then we're going to come back in the spring because we know that that product that we put down in the fall isn't going to carry us through the season. But it's giving us a head start.
Marsha, are there any crops that need a little more attention or preventative work in the fall versus other crops? Say if there's one that's a little more susceptible or needs a little extra help in weed control for the following year?
I wouldn't necessarily say needs a little extra help. Personal opinion, I like to see residuals put down in the fall for like wheat, canola. We can do it for corn to a certain extent. We can do it for soybeans to a certain extent. Those, you know, the earlier the seeded, the better off a fall application is. I'm not a big fan of putting a fall application down on edibles because by the time edibles get planted, the soil is alive and it's working already. So we tend to lose the residual effect with a fall application. Same can be said for sunflowers. So really, you're looking at, you know, wheat, peas, lentils, canola, those crops, stuff like that. We really want to get that application down in the fall because those are early seeded crops.
I see. And when you're defining edibles, for those who are unaware, what are edibles besides the ones that make you feel funny and relaxed?
So edibles, I'm talking edible beans, so pinto beans, kidney beans,
okay.
You know, navy beans, black turtles, those type of edible beans.
Hmm.
I have to be really careful when I talk about edibles. Bridget knows my story.
I do. Marsha has a really great story about edible dry beans, but that is not an on-air story. We have to talk about that when we're in studio together, Justin. And also, Marsha, you should know your edibles has made several listeners giggle. I'm getting those messages. And one of our friends, a joint friend, I guess. Boy, that's a terrible way to say it, but a mutual friend. Thank you. That we
give her a rim shot, Addison.
Thanks. Yeah, he's asking if you have any fall weed control in rhubarb. Any ideas of what he could do for his garden? I think he's a rhubarb advocate, like we are.
You know, I would have to look at the Treflan label and see if Treflan is labeled on rhubarb because I have no idea.
I don't either.
My rhubarb gets
it just goes.
Send me his information because I'll find out, because our research guy out on the East Coast, he's into all that small crop stuff. He'd be able to tell me.
Okay, I will send you, again, it's a mutual friend of ours from Twitter, yeah. And who is a rhubarb advocate, so I'll make sure to share with you. So that'd be great.
Well, I mean, my rhubarb normally just goes to seed, and then after a while, I just, you know, in the fall, I just basically mow it off.
So, Marsha, you're out traveling today, and are you seeing any fall tillage work that's going on that might indicate someone is thinking ahead about their fall weed control, or they're just working their way through harvest and it's in some areas trying to dry the ground up? What's your eyes on the road say today?
You know, there's not a lot of tillage going on right now. I've had a lot of questions around it, though, professionally. There's a lot of guys that are talking about it. It's now we just got to get them to pull the trigger. I have seen quite mm-hmm. a bit of tillage on some of these wheat fields. So that's kind of been interesting to see. But it's going to be one of those where, you know, we want to put it down with fertilizer and let her go.
Yeah.
So
Any word on fall fertilizer? I mean, folks are concerned with input costs.
All I've heard is it's expensive.
That's a fair statement.
I've been told, and that's been from both retailers and farmers. You know, it is what it is. And these guys are just going to have to bite the bullet. If they're not going to put anything down this fall, then they better, you know, maybe start booking some or contracting some for spring.
Sure.
And I guess, you know, my comment on that all the time when I worked retail is I don't want you to do everything 100% right now, but let's cover some of your needs.
Is for the year as a whole, coming off of a cool and wet start to the year and having some cool wet periods of summer before we eventually finally warmed it up, but even then some spots still received maybe a little more rain than they'd want. Not everywhere was like that, but as a whole, what was the crop looking like for a disease standpoint? Was this for it being a wet year for the most part? Were we seeing diseases remaining on the low end of the spectrum, or was it kind of a bit more of a above average year in terms of disease across crops across our region?
You know, it really depends. Wheat and barley, I've heard, you know, that's been across the board with some scab. I don't know what falling numbers came back at. I haven't really heard a lot of that. Edible beans were hit and miss on white mold, and a lot of that had to do with planting. So a lot of the disease in edible beans and sunflowers, even in soybeans and stuff, a lot of that came with late planting dates. So the later the planting date, they kind of missed out on that disease window. I do know it was in the North Dakota
crop and pest report.
The pest report. You know, Sun and Dust showed up for the first time in North Dakota, mm-hmm. down around Oaks. Now, there's really nothing we can do to control that. It just is what it is. That's going to be a varietal issue in the future. Frog eye leaf spot showed up down in that Oaks area.
Yep.
And that is, it seems that was a varietal issue as well. And then verticillium
yep.
wilt.
Verticillium
wilt. That showed up in onions. Verticillium wilt. We did see that show up in onions down around that Oaks area too. And that's, you know, that's a lot of irrigation down there, so that gets a little bit more interesting. But as a whole, I mean, disease was kind of hit and miss this year. We were gearing up, you know, for a dry bean, for a white mold run, and we just didn't have it because of planting dates.
Bridget, last year we had our soybeans. Those were sprayed. Was it Affiance? Is that what it was, or am I getting this mixed up?
Nope, we used Affiance from Gowan, and also Marcia made sure we had Affiance for our corn crop this year, too.
Right, and was that for fungus or white mold?
In soybeans,
well,
we were looking for white mold.
And white mold are the same thing.
Oh, well, all right. Yeah. There we go. So I had it right. I just gave you two answers for the same question. for those that were treating for white mold in corn this year, I guess around our area, since it's, you know, it's hit or miss across the region, were we seeing an uptick in white mold across the corn crops for those that weren't treating for it?
So white mold is not something that generally hits with the corn crop. The grass crops, we don't generally see white mold. We see white mold in our broadleaf, so our soybeans, our edible beans, sunflowers, canola, that type of thing. Corn this year, I haven't heard of too much disease pressure. I haven't seen too much disease pressure either in the corn crop this year. So a lot of fungicide that was put down early, such as Affiance, it was to protect any future disease pressure, but it was also more of like a plant health. Okay. So let's make the roots stronger. Let's, you know, make that plant healthier so that if it goes into a situation, you know, it's going to be strong enough to come out the other side.
I see. Yeah. So kind of using it like a preventative versus a treatment.
Right.
Okay.
You know, generally when we see white mold in crop, you know, whether it be canola, edible beans, soybeans, sunflowers, again, it's too late. The damage has been done, so then we're not necessarily trying to cure it at that point. We're just trying to protect what we can.
Okay.
Well, and some of that, when you mentioned about, you know, safe or standability of the corn crop, I've had some messages from folks over in eastern Indiana and Ohio talking about a lot more stock rot and crown rot this year. So their standability was not great. And when that happens, especially if you get a lot of wind, those plants can start to fall down. When plants fall down, the ear hits the ground and you're not going to be able to pick that up with a combine. There's their downside.
Or if you have root rot or whatnot, you're combining in one direction, which is never fun.
Nope.
Oh, no.
Now, I've seen a lot of fields this year. You know, we had some pretty strong winds come through, and I've seen a lot of fields leaning. So that could be interesting. And once again, that could come to a varietal issue.
Yeah, it could. All right. Marcia, thank you. I know you're on the road today and you took the time to stay in good cell service so we could talk. So much appreciate that. And thank you for all the work that you have done this summer helping us with our Here We Grow project. Thanks to you and to Gowan Company.
Thank you, guys. We appreciate being able to participate.
Yep. Thanks, Marcia.
Have a great afternoon, Marcia. Drive safe. And to the rest of you, be safe on the road, too. We're going to come back to wrap up headlines and the weather. So stay tuned.
And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thanks for rejoining us. 1:53 on this Tuesday afternoon. We have a rundown on your forecast coming up here in just a moment. If you want to be a part of the conversation, though, ask some questions, feel free to do so. Give us a call on the Red Wing Shoe line. That's 701-293-9000. You can always reach us via email as well with any weather-related topics or questions or agriculture topics and questions. That's weather@flagfamily.com and comment boxes there on Facebook and YouTube Live. Bridget, why don't we say we hit on a couple of these ag topics here, and let's touch into the 8 reasons soy is good for your health.
Well, and I think one of the great reasons we should talk about soybeans is because we raise a lot of them here. Mm-hmm. Soybeans are very prominent, especially because we have 5 of the top 10 growing counties in the U.S. And it's because we have large counties, large geographical areas, and we raise a tremendous amount of soybean bushels on those acres that we get that status. Now, soy is good for us in a lot of ways. One, we've got 2 new crushing plants here in the state, so we're going to have more oil and meal available. In your body, for health reasons, soy helps to lower your risk of heart disease and your blood pressure. It helps with cognitive functions. It can protect against prostate and breast cancer, lowering your risk. Also provides you with a high quality protein that can help you with your weight management. When you feel full, you tend not to eat as much, and soy can be helpful in that regard. And it's good for bone health, especially as women age. And if you're not consuming as much calcium through dairy, soy would be another way for you to retain some of that bone health. So I think those are great reasons to want to have more soy in your diet in a variety of ways.
Yeah, sure. Seems like it. And, you know, what would be the way to put it? What would be like a good source to get this out of? Would you just be going out eating soybeans, or is there like a soy supplement? I don't know.
Well, I think one of the first things that comes to mind for me, there are those who might want to use tofu. Tofu is indeed a soybean product. And we think about tofu as a vegetarian dish, but it can be paired with, you know, if you're making something with chicken like a stir fry, you can add tofu for it for additional proteins. There's nothing wrong with that. Tofu essentially is mostly flavorless. It absorbs the flavors of whatever you are cooking with it. So it's not a bad way to use it. There are those who choose soy milk. And the soy milk, which is generally, I wouldn't classify that as a milk, but that's the name it currently has. You can use that as one of the ways to get more soy into your diet as well. And edamame, which is a vegetable. It is an immature soybean. I raise edamame in my garden. They are a great source of being able to get something soy protein into your diet. And they're simple. They're just like any other bean. They tend to be low to the ground, kind of bushy. The pods, at least in my garden, will get some splashback and a heavy rain. So I just have to wash those off thoroughly. And then I will steam them with a little bit of sea salt on them and just pop the beans out of the pods and eat them like that. They're great.
You know, I had completely forgot about edamame. And we used to use this a lot in the restaurant back in the day when I did a lot of cooking back then. You could do a lot of fun things with edamame, but I had completely just spaced on it.
Yeah, so it's one of my favorite things to grow anytime, and it's really simple to grow.
Might have to add that to the old rotation next year in the garden, throw some edamame in there.
I will forewarn you, those plants can produce very heavily. So I get a lot of 2 to 3 bean pods, and I will get a tremendous amount of pods per plant. So if you're just starting out, you may only want to try with 5 or 10 plants before you go hog wild and have a lot of edamame.
Five or ten.
On the flip side of that, yeah.
It's like my whole garden.
On the flip
Bridget.
Side of that, it freezes really well. So I will freeze edamame after I've washed it and then can take it out and use it throughout the winter months.
I got a downsize on a few things that I'm going to be growing next year. I did 3 of my vertical growing squash because I was like, 3's not a lot. That should be enough. Oh, was I wrong? Those things pull stupid yield. The one I think is now standing about 4.5 feet tall, and you can just see all the stumps on the trunk to the top where I've ripped off squash on it. I don't know. I think I still have 7 in the fridge. I think there's 6 still on the plants, and I probably have about 10 bags that I've frozen of yellow summer squash.
I would tell you this. I don't have a problem with a lot of that squash. I think you're in a good place, but you just need more square footage. You don't need to cut back on your plants. You need less lawn.
Yes, exactly. I've cut down the tree. No, I can't cut down the tree. We'll make a little more room next year. We'll grow a few extra things. I appreciate everyone joining us today, sending in listener questions and whatnot. We're back tomorrow, 1 to 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I got a full rundown on the forecast and detail coming up with the Jay Thomas Show. It starts next. Bye.